the hour of 10 a.m. having arrived, I will call the House Ethics Committee to order. A quorum is present. I've got a few things I'd like to go through here before we get started. I'd just like to remind everyone that the rules, what the rules are of the committee hearing, everyone must be seated when they are in the hearing room. There'll be no standing or sitting in the walkways or aisles. If you need further accommodation, please let the sergeants know. Signs are not permitted in the hearing room. Please leave all signs outside. Clapping and other disruptions are not allowed. As Chair Moeller mentioned in the Ethics Committee on Tuesday, we do not accept public testimony. Now, where we get this a little confused, this is not a court of law. This is a House Ethics Committee meeting. So a couple of remarks I'd like to start with, just so we kind of know where we're headed here. Today, the House Ethics Committee is called to order for the purpose of conducting a probable cause hearing for two complainants. The first complaint that we will take up was brought by Leader Long against Representative Hudson and Engen and was co-signed by Representative Sensor Murrah. The second complaint was brought by Representative Igo against Representative Falconer and was co-signed by Representative Schultz. I want to make a few introductory remarks and give some background on the process. The House Ethics Committee is not a court of law, and this process is legislative in nature, not judicial. The primary purpose of the House Ethics Committee is to create an avenue for representatives to hold each other accountable between elections. The ultimate accountability, of course, is the voters. Rule 610 of the House rules states that a complaint may be brought about conduct of a member who violates a rule or administrative policy of the House that violates accepted norms of House behavior that betrays the public trust or that tends to bring the House into dishonor, disrepute. Ethics committees must be signed, ethics committee complaints must be signed by two members and submitted to the Speaker of the House. Within 7 days of that submission, the Speaker forwards the complaint to the Ethics Committee, which holds a hearing within 21 days. And we have met those rules. Today we'll be holding the hearing to determine whether probable cause exists to support the complaints. Discussion and testimony taken at this hearing is only focused on the allegation contained in the complaints. Any attempt to discuss any further matter allegations outside the bounds of the complaint, and I will not allow it. Per Rule 7, the House Committee on Ethics Rules and Procedures, if a majority of the whole committee finds sufficient factual evidence exists to believe that allegations contained in the complaint are more probably true than not, the committee shall inform the Speaker and the member and the members named that probable cause has been found, and there'll be further public hearings at that point. If the majority of the committee fails to find probable cause, the complaint shall be dismissed. Today's due process meeting will follow past practice, and the agenda is as follows. Representative Engen and Representative Hudson complaint, up to 45-minute presentation from Leader Long and Representative Sensor Murrah, up to 30-minute presentation from Representative Engen, 15 minutes for member questions, and up to 30-minute presentation from Representative Hudson, and then up to 15 minutes member question, and way heavy on the words up to. And we will be timing things so that everyone is treated fairly. Up to the 30-minute presentation from Reps Igo and Schultz. This is for the Falconer complaint, up to 30 minutes presentation from Reps and Falconer, up to 15 minutes of member questions. Committee staff will keep track of time. I will notify participants when you have 5 minutes remaining and when your time has expired. Ethics complaints are extremely rare. The Ethics Committee is unique among all the committees in the House. It's an inward-facing committee, a venue whereby legislators hold each other accountable. It's not a public policy-making body. The most recent ethics complaints were in 2021, 2015, 2009, were the last ethics complaints. Please bear with us as we navigate this somewhat unfamiliar process. Chair Moeller or nonpartisan staff, have I missed anything that we needed to go over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think we've missed anything. I did neglect at the last committee meeting to welcome Representative Liz Ryer as the alternate to the committee before it was Representative Amanda Hemmensing-Yeager, who's now over in the Senate. So just wanted to make sure people understood why Representative Ryer was in the room. And then, Mr. Chair, I did have a question for you. So Representative Igo submitted a letter as part of his evidence, and it is a letter to Majority Leader Thune and Minority Leader Schumer about the boundary waters. It's an issue letter that I did sign on to. It's dated April 15th, and I just wanted to make sure that that you're okay with me continuing on, or if you felt that I needed to recuse myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Mueller, and thank you for bringing that to my attention. And I have done my due diligence, my research on the issue, and I see where no way that has a conflict with today's hearing. So I would prefer if you stayed on. You know, that how many signatures are on that thing? I mean, everybody signed that letter out to Congress, and that has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. So I'm perfectly fine with that if you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll note that I did check with nonpartisan counsel, too, to make sure that there was no conflict that I needed to be aware of with that. So,
and that's,
thank you.
If nonpartisan says there isn't, then there isn't. Okay, so with that being said, thank you for that, just for the record. Okay, so the first order of business is to approve the minutes from Tuesday, April 28th. Chair Mueller?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Chair Mueller has moved the minutes of April 28th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Mueller. Okay, so we will start with the Representative Engen and Representative Hudson. The complainants are Leader Long and Representative Senator Mura. Is Leader Long ready to go? Okay, welcome to the Ethics Committee. If you could please make your presentation, and we have a person here timing things, so we'll.
Thank you, Chair Davis. Thank you, Chair Mueller and members. In no other job is it acceptable to leave in the middle of the workday to go drinking, and it should not be acceptable at the Capitol either. The public expects us to do our jobs. They expect that when they hire us, we will take the work seriously. Until recently, both Representatives Hudson and Engen were appointed to the Education Finance Committee. On Thursday, March 26th, they left committee in the middle of a hearing to go to a local bar. And with members' permission, I'd like to present some slides and images to demonstrate. So the House Education Finance Committee gaveled in at 1 p.m. Representatives Engen and Hudson were not yet present. 5 minutes after the gavel, Representatives Engen and Hudson arrived together. 50 minutes after the gavel, Representative Engen left committee, as you can see in more detail from this video. Fifty-eight minutes after the gavel, Representative Hudson asked a question of one of the testifiers on House File 3930. 59 minutes after the gavel, Representative Hudson was last seen on the camera image from House Info. And then 63 minutes after the gavel is the last time, the next time we see Representative Hudson's chair, and he's no longer present. Discussion is still continuing at that point on House File 3930. At this point, you can see that neither Representative Engen or Hudson are there, and they are absent for the remaining 40 minutes of committee. They both left during consideration of House File 3930, which was a bill regarding funding to support teacher retention. At the time that they left, there was still an entire bill that the committee had not taken up for consideration, and that was House File 3585, excuse me, which was a bill to establish an interagency council on student attendance. So they were absent from a bill to combat student absenteeism. It was a bipartisan bill presented jointly by Representative Bakeberg and Representative Keeler, really the model of the type of work we should be doing together at the legislature in a tied house. So where did Representatives Engen and Hudson go when they left committee early? Well, as you can see from this photo, they went to a local bar. And the reason we know this is that Mr. Brian Basham happened to be at the bar doing a DoorDash order and recognized them. He noted in his Facebook post that the two had both finished hard liquor drinks and had ordered beers. As you can see from the blown up image here, there is a completed drink of hard alcohol in a tumbler container that's visible in the photo here. And both of them have ordered tall beers that are visible in front of each of them. When asked by the press why he had snapped the photo, Mr. Basham said it bothered him that it was the middle of the workday and they were out drinking. Mr. Basham told Care 11 News, quote, "The state of Minnesota is paying them to be here working, and they weren't here working." Mr. Basham noted the time in his Facebook post as 2:30 p.m. when he spotted Representatives Engen and Hudson. The Education Finance Committee was still meeting at that time. The minutes note that the committee adjourned at 2:55 p.m. It also appears that they had been there for some time when they were spotted, since they'd already finished one round of drinks. Leaving committee to go drink certainly violates accepted norms at the Capitol under Rule 6.10. It also violates the Education Finance Committee's own rules. Under Rule 4 of the Education Finance Committee, which I submitted for the committee ahead of time, quote, "Members are expected to attend all meetings in person." Let me read that again. Members are expected to attend all meetings in person. It further states, "Excused absences are at the discretion of the chair, and members requesting to be excused must notify the House DFL and House Republican Committee administrators prior to the hearing." It does not appear that either member requested an excused absence, and I highly doubt that Chair Joachim or Chair Kreisha would have viewed a trip to the bar as a reason to excuse attendance. Our committees are the place where the bulk of the work at the Capitol takes place. They have quorum requirements to ensure that a minimum number of members are there to complete the work. We expect our colleagues to be there for this work. Indeed, the Education Finance Committee is one of the most sought after committees at the Capitol and oversees a significant portion of the state budget. Its important decisions impact over 900,000 students attending schools in Minnesota. In addition to violating our norms, these actions violate the public trust and bring the House into dishonor under Rule 6.10. Mr. Basham told the press that regardless of which party you were from, it would bother him to see them out drinking when they are being paid by the public to do work. Poll after poll shows that trust in government is declining. The public expects at a bare minimum that we are doing the work, hearing bills, debating them, amending them. It is an embarrassment to this institution to have the press cover stories of legislators leaving committee to drink, which for any regular job would be a sanctionable offense. Think of a nurse or a teacher or a retail worker who left in the middle of the day to head to a bar. There would certainly be consequences for any of those employees. Minnesotans don't expect that of each other, and they expect better of our representatives. Beyond the direct evidence we have of leaving committee an hour early, there are also unanswered questions that are equally troubling. We reconvened in session at 3:30 p.m., about an hour after Representatives Engen and Hudson were spotted at the bar. Votes were taken in that session on critical matters, including gun violence prevention and ICE presence in Minnesota schools. We don't know the intoxication levels of Representatives Hudson or Engen when we were back in session taking important votes. We don't know how they got back to the Capitol. Certainly, the public and our colleagues expect that members are not inebriated on the floor when we make important decisions about our laws. We also know from press reporting that Representative Hudson has a permit to carry and that he was carrying that day. It is a misdemeanor under Minnesota Statute 624.7142 to carry a concealed weapon with a blood alcohol content above 0.04. And to put that in context, this is well below the legal limit to drive, which is what we typically think of from press reporting about blood alcohol content. And to put 0.04 in context, as you can see from this chart from St. Ben's and St. John's, most people reach a blood alcohol content above 0.04 after two drinks. And we know based on the witness photograph that Representative Hudson had at least two drinks before returning to the floor. So it's an open question whether Representative Hudson was carrying on the House floor, and if so, if he was committing a misdemeanor while doing so. If true, violating the law while in the course of performing your duty as a representative would certainly further betray the public trust and bring the House into dishonor. Committee members, I know it's a serious thing to bring an ethics complaint, and it's not an action that Representative Sensor Moore or I take lightly. The evidence in the complaint we submitted is as clear as it comes. It is photographic proof. Leaving committee nearly an hour early to drink violates our norms, the public's trust, and brings the House into dishonor. It violates the rules of the Education Finance Committee, which requires in-person attendance or to be excused. I have seen no public apologies or even acknowledgement from either member to date regarding the actions taken during the legislative workday. In fact, I've seen public defiance and an attempt to deflect by pointing at others. Nearly all of Representative Engen's submitted exhibits for today don't relate to him at all, but instead to actions of other elected officials. It appears that a main argument may be other elected officials drink and drive too. To be clear, the complaint that Representative Sensor Moore and I submitted does not relate to criminal activity away from the Capitol. There is a separate court process to resolve those issues, and as you noted, Mr. Chair, this is not a court. This is a legislative body and a legislative committee. Our complaint is squarely focused on the actions taken during a legislative committee hearing and on the floor. These actions are clearly within the purview of this committee. We cannot send a message to the public or to our colleagues that this is acceptable behavior. We need to make absolutely clear that this can't happen again. Without accountability, we'd set a precedent that future members can hide behind if they choose the same irresponsible actions. Some might suggest that the removal of Representatives Engen and Hudson from their committee assignments was punishment enough. First, removing the members from committees after deadline is hardly a penalty. There are no more committees for them to miss. But more importantly, Speaker Damuth was clear in her public statements that she removed them from committees in relation to them getting pulled over later that night and not in relation to them leaving committee to drink. She said, quote, "I am making my decision based on the police report and the information that I received. I am not addressing a photo that was out there, not addressing that at this time." So there has been no consequence directly related to the actions on which the complaint is focused. The question then for you all is what disciplinary action is appropriate. And that's a question that I leave to your capable judgment, but I ask that you do not let this behavior go unsanctioned. The public deserves better, our colleagues deserve better, and this institution deserves better. Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you, members.
Okay, we will now go to respondents. Representative Engen, you and your counsel have up to 30 minutes for your presentation.
Bear with me, Mr. Chair, just getting this technology set up. Thank you.
Your time doesn't start until you get going. So. Yes.
Well, thank you, co-chairs. Thank you guys for being here. I know it's not under the most fun circumstances, but I'm going to start out by saying this. Before we get into the substance of the complaint that's before the committee today, I do want to acknowledge my remorse, my shame, and my regret of the actions of the 27th. I'm holding myself accountable because I broke a set of standards that I hold myself to that I care about. Sorry to my family, my friends, and everybody that's been supportive, as well as the officers. I'm extremely thankful for them on the events of that evening. But when it comes to this complaint, to assert that I am anything other than a hard worker and a man of integrity as it pertains to my job as a state representative is ridiculous. That committee to which Representative Long speaks of, I missed precisely zero votes. I spoke twice within that committee. I asked a question which was not answered. And three preceding bills all included the same substance to which I asked a question regarding Minnesota Department of Education grant funding, oversight, and management dollars. The bills that we had before us were regarding student mental health, teacher retention, and workforce burnout. And I didn't feel it a good thing for MDE to take money away from those programs should those laid over bills be potentially included into an omnibus bill. So what did I do? When the MDE policy analyst and public policy lobbyist sat down, I decided that it was not worthy of my time to listen to them advocate for more funding for themselves after having overseen over $250 million in fraud and grant oversight and management when it came to feeding our future. And what did I do after that? I left committee, I used the restroom, I called my wife, I charged my phone, and I got lunch in the little amount of time that we had that was available before the workday kicks right back up. I think all of you know that this isn't a typical 9-to-5 job, and it's not one that comes with a punch card. But it can be around the clock some days, and you can have very, very little time to use the facilities or eat. That's what I did. And having had a single beer, it did not in any way, shape, or form change my duties or my actions. I spoke on the House floor that evening for over 9 minutes, and I genuinely cared about the substance of the bills that were before the House floor that day. But again, I want to thank you all for being here. Happy to answer any questions, and I'll turn it over to my attorney.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record. What firm?
My name's Chris Maddle. I'm with my own firm. It's called Maddle PA, and I represent my friend and client, Representative Elliot Engen.
Thank you.
You bet. So if what I heard correctly here from Representative Long is that our complaint does not involve activity outside of the legislature, yet that was all he talked about. He actually went so far as to spend money on a board putting up a picture of two guys across West 7th at a bar and grill having a burger and a beer. That is entirely what your complaint is about, and let's not make any jokes about it or any mistake about it. And I think it's important to look at the entire record as to what happened as opposed to some little pictures with some outlines on some people. First, 1:39 to 1:41 p.m. This is a video of Representative Engen asking a question at that committee, because he was asking the question because the Minnesota Department of Education gets 5 to 10% of every grant to the Department of Education, regardless of where it goes, including Feeding Our Future. And he was asking, is the Department of Education yet again going to be getting money from yet another grant that should be going to students? Let's listen to his question and the answer.
Thank you. We're going to go to Rep. Engen and then Chair Youakim to close out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Youakim. My question for you is, grant O&M, are there going to be costs associated with grant oversight and management from MDE should this bill pass with money appropriated?
Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Engen, for the question. So there's a statute that passed back in 23 or 24 regarding that there's an underlying appropriation that's held back from the grant, the money we put in, 5% if it's a legislatively directed appropriated grant, and 10% if it's competitive. I fooled around with the idea of lowering that percentage to MDE, but left it as is because we were laying it over on the table because I wanted this to be the start of the discussion, especially with what Representative Hudson said, how do we get there? How do we figure out how to make this a stable force and ongoing? But no, that's already in statute, and we didn't touch that statute.
A follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. I am a part of this generation. You know, my brother is still a high school student. He's experienced a lot of the mental health concerns that have been brought up by your testifiers, as well as shared in some of the member testimony on this bill. The last thing I want to see is even a single cent of that going towards an agency that has seen over $10.6 million in grant oversight and management costs in the past 3 years. And if we're going to be denying them the resources that we just heard that they need, all for a grant oversight, that seems like it's a misplaced priorities to me. So should this bill go forward, I'd love to see those changes made. Thank you.
And of course, now we know that the vote didn't actually go forward. In fact, the education committee then continued at 1:53 to 1:54 p.m.
And ended with this. And so we are here to support this bill and would be eager to answer any and all of your questions.
Thank you. I think I'm going to have you. We have one more testifier. I'll have one of you step aside and then be around for questions, and I'll call up our next testifier, Dr. Justin Killian. Once you get settled, go ahead and please state your name for the record and proceed.
As Mr. Killian comes to sit down, Representative Engen leaves the room.
And Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hill, thank you. My name is Dr. Justin Killian.
And Dr. Killian, by the way, is a public policy director for the Minnesota Department of Education, one of approximately 40 that are at the Minnesota Department of Education. Query what a policy director does at the Minnesota Department of Education, but there were no votes taken whatsoever at this thing. So Representative Engen did the high crime and misdemeanor of going, getting his phone charged, talking to his wife and going to the bathroom and then getting something to eat. And he went to what has now become the kind of most regular place for the Republicans in the legislature to go for lunch, Burger Mo's. And then we have the offending picture of two friends eating and having a beer over lunch. Now, what I just heard from Representative Long, and again, he said that he had no evidence of this, and of that, I agree. You have no evidence that they were impaired when they came back to the floor. You have no evidence that Walter Hudson was impaired sitting there and with a firearm. You have nothing with respect to that. You have a couple of guys drinking a beer over lunch. But you then emphasize, though, sir, you emphasize that one of the things that Representative Engen did is that he missed out on a debate regarding bipartisanship.
Sir, if could you speak to us?
What he missed out on a debate regarding bipartisanship. Let's look at that night. And this is a 3 minutes of an 8-minute speech that Elian Engen gave that night regarding bipartisanship.
But passing this bill is something that we can do so that less people feel and hear that sound and the profound pain that comes with it. Thank you, members. Ask you for a green vote.
I recognize the member from Minooka, Representative Engen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I want to say to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, thank you for caring about this issue. I mean that. And while we might not always come down on the same side of how we get there, Representative Tabke, Representative Johnson, I think your words do mean a lot. And they mean just as much
actually, nothing could ever mean as much as Jackie and Mike's, Harper's parents, who did testify in our committee. Before I was sworn in here in the legislature, I remembered a moment back in 2012. It was December 14th. That I watched on the smart board of one of my classrooms that the teacher turned on, a bunch of kids coming out of a school building in Newtown, Connecticut, with their hands on their heads because they'd just gone through and experienced a school shooting. The look of fear, uncertainty, distress, trauma. All of my friends and I, we stopped, we watched that board after we were being rowdy, rambunctious, and probably idiots like we were, but we went silent, and it stuck with me. Why did it stick with me? Because it was the first time that we'd ever recognized our own mortality in a school building. And that this was becoming a more and more common, disgusting, and sad occurrence within our schools, that people would look to do harm to the most vulnerable amongst us. 10 years later, in June of 2022, that's when a ball day happened. I wasn't elected yet. I wasn't sworn in yet. It was in the middle of a campaign. But I knew that if I did get sworn in, I'd want to do something about this issue. And one of the things that I remember sticking out to me, drawing me to tears, in the press conference at the White House after this issue occurred, was a story about Maita Ulance. She was shot in the Uvalde school shooting, and the only way that they could identify that 10-year-old girl was by the self-painted green on her Converse shoes with smiley faces. That's what her parents had to identify her. It broke me. I didn't know how to react. I just knew something needed to be done. And Representative Tabke, you said it. Let's just get something done. You said those exact words. Representative Greenman, do something to make it right. I agree with you.
Representative Engen was asking to do was to put security in schools, that immediately when a teacher or something was happening in school would have locked down that school and created it into, his words, a ghost town. And what was done on that? Jack squat. Nothing. So I'm not going to sit here and listen to these cries of bipartisanship when my kids are still going to public school to this day and are in jeopardy because this body doesn't work.
Mr. Chair, this is...
I am not going to
listen
to
this. Mr. Chair, this is irrelevant.
Sir, if we could talk to the...
I am responding to his claims of bipartisanship about how Elliot Engen missed out on bipartisanship, Chair Mohler.
Mr. Chair.
He said it, not me.
Mr. Chair.
Let's time out.
He's talking about his own personal family and situation.
Right.
That's inappropriate.
Sir, let's keep it to the Engen situation.
If we go further, the four session ended, and then we talk about the Constitution of the United States, which, yes... you're obligated to follow just like everybody else, which provides for due process of law, and you cannot deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Well, is that happening? Senator Toujan, DUI, 2022, fourth degree driving while impaired, DUI, operating motor vehicle, alcohol concentration 0.08 within 2 hours. Pled guilty. Nothing happened before this committee. He got his second one. It's the second time the Star Tribune said he took office, said he's been arrested for suspicion while driving while intoxicated. He gets charged by criminal complaint this time 1 year ago. Two counts, guilty. Nothing happens. Dan Wolgamott, 2023, video of this one, same two charges, guilty. He said, I take full responsibility. DFL State Representative Wolgamott apologizes for DUI arrest. Now, we just heard from Representative Long that Senator Engen never really took responsibility for what happened. This is his ex post that night. To my family, colleagues, and constituents, I am deeply sorry. I strive to be a man of good character. My actions fell short last night. I will learn from this. I will do better, Elliot. That night. Breonne Curran, 2023, same two charges, fourth degree DUI, driving alcohol concentration 0.08 within 2 hours. And in her case, she allegedly told the deputy that they were having trouble getting home and thought they were in St. Paul, 50 miles from Harris. The complaint alleges they told officers they had consumed three drinks. Well, interesting. Harris, 41 minutes away from St. Paul. Guilty. Nothing happens. The current Public Safety Committee, chaired by Representative Kelly Moeller. Breonne Curran, still sitting on that committee. No repercussions whatsoever. He's been stripped of his committee assignments. She's sitting there. They sitting there. Let's put aside Senator Nicole Mitchell, guilty. Let's put aside the governor, who has a DUI and is guilty. Let's also remember, with respect to Sweeney's, which has its bipartisan lawmakers who dine together across party lines get a free meal and beers. Well, here's one. Well, I guess that's Senator Jung, and who's that? Representative Bjorn?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe this was submitted. Hold on.
Excuse me, sir. Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't recall seeing this submission in our packets. Was this submitted?
It was provided.
It's right here.
There's beers.
This particular picture?
Oh, I don't know.
And here's Julia Coleman.
Yeah, we've never, Mr. Chair, we've never seen.
Okay, time out.
More beers.
Sir, time out. Let's stick to the things that have been submitted here. And
I believe it has.
I don't see it.
Representative Engen believes the same thing. In any event, Sweeney's publicizes this. Here's pictures on the internet, legislators at lunch having beers. To use something that I've used in a number of closing arguments, it's a Danish proverb. Better the world should know you as a sinner than God know you as a hypocrite. Lord knows I'm a sinner. Representative Engen has admitted that he's a sinner. We ain't no hypocrites. This is a good man. He does not need to be treated this way for political theater. I have represented people on both sides of the aisle that are existing legislators right now. I know what goes on here. I know what happens at that northeast exit. I know when you leave there occasionally, you can go out there and smell pot. And I've seen the people that are doing that.
Mr. Chair, again, this is not enough.
Doing nothing about it.
Sir, let's keep it to the Engen case here, please.
I'm asking for equal protection. I'm asking for this body to actually do something with bipartisanship and not do something with theater. Do something for HCMC, which is going broke. Do something for kids in school.
Again,
stop
Mr. Chair,
doing
this.
This
is related to policy, not the ethics complaint.
Yes, let's keep it to the ethics complaint.
Stop doing this nonsense. Get to work. Nothing further.
I'd like to wrap it up, Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say this. That day, I was working extremely hard, as demonstrated by the video that was evidenced. I spoke twice within the committee that's been referenced as to the one that I quote-unquote missed, but zero actions were taken that I had any jurisdiction or vote on. I spoke for over 9 minutes on the House floor that evening. I talked with many of you about bills that I'm working on and bills that you're working on in a bipartisan manner. I conducted myself in a way that I would be proud of that day. that evening, it's a different story. And I'm atoning for that. And while it's still fresh, I can honestly say that it's going to make me stronger. It's going to make me better. And that God puts roadblocks potentially in your life that help you course correct. They refine you. That's what I'm doing. But as it pertains to my official duties, I take those as seriously as anybody else, if not more. I'm the first in the office and often one of the last to leave. And I don't know if you guys saw me in my first term versus today. I think it's aged me a little bit because I care. So with that, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Engen. Committee members, we will now go to member questions. We have up to 15 minutes to ask questions. Does anyone have any questions? Chair Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank you for obviously for being here. Were you excused from the committee, the education committee, by either of the chairs at the time you left?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It's typical for people to leave, come and go as in committee as often as they see fit. There was no business, and so I believe other members were missing. And it hasn't been enforced by the committee in any way, shape, or form for people to have to request to use the facilities or make a phone call or meet with a constituent in the past. So it wasn't something that was even considered, nor is it probably to this day.
Representative Moeller.
After committee or after you left the committee, though, did you come back?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Seeing as there was no business, official business before the committee when it came to a vote, seeing as we were listening to bills that MDE had grant oversight and management dollars taken from, and having asked a question related to that, and to it kind of be scoffed away as something that we can't do anything about because a law was passed in 2023 during the trifecta, I didn't see need to sit through a committee in which MDE advocates for money for MDE. So no, I did not return. I went to the next opportunity for me to be productive and to actually represent my constituents, which was on the House floor where I then spoke for 9 minutes.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where in the rules does it say it's okay to leave committee as long as no votes are considered?
Madam Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would say that if the new standard is going to be that we can no longer leave committee when no business is before the committee, that we're going to be in this ethics committee. There's going to be a lot more hearings happening on any day that ends in Y, because this is common practice. We all know how little time we have throughout the day to eat, use the facilities, make a phone call, meet with a constituent. Those are all normative practice of this institution. And to say otherwise, I think, is disingenuous.
Chair Moeller.
When did you, do you admit that you were at Burger Mo's when the committee was still proceeding?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So based off of that image that Mr. Bryan, I don't know his last name, but the photo that was circulated, I zoomed in on the inning of the Twins game, which was opening day. They were in the bottom of the second. There's a 2-2 count, and there are two outs. The only instance that took place with that scenario was when Tyler O'Neill was batting, the left fielder, and it was at 2:48. The committee ended at 2:54, and there was no business before it. So a cumulative total of 7 minutes, plus whatever it was for me to order a burger, that's how long I'd been there. So it wouldn't take us as long as Representative Long or Censor Mira alleged that we were there in some drunkenly fashion, which we weren't. We were eating. Maybe I'd been there for a cumulative total of 15 minutes at most.
Chair Moeller.
Does it say anywhere in the rules that you can leave committee because you don't like the witnesses who are testifying or the content of their testimony?
Representative Engen.
Several members from the DFL have done the exact same. When MPPOA or the sheriffs or others in our public safety committee, of which you're the chair, Chair Moeller, members have left the committee because they simply didn't want to hear something. And that was when official business was taken. No official business or duties were taken the day that I left committee.
That wasn't a, that wasn't an opportunity for me to represent my constituents. It was one in which I was expected to sit down and listen to bureaucrats advocate for more money for themselves sitting in St. Paul boardrooms, not students and teachers in classrooms who actually need it. I didn't feel it a good use of my time to continue to listen through that after having asked a question on it and having been told that I wasn't, that nothing was going to change on that front.
Chair Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you left committee during House File 3930, and you talked a little bit about that and had evidence. There was also House File 3585, which was a bill about student attendance. Were you present for these testifiers? Matt Shaver, Senior Policy Director, Ed Allies. Patrice Relaford, Vice President of Collective Impact and Giving, Minneapolis Foundation. Megan Arillo, Legislative Policy Manager for MDE. Kalike Rogers, Executive Director, Catalyst for Systems Change. Zerilli Basul, Minnesota Youth Council Coordinator. Or Lawrence Wells, a student.
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Chair Mueller, you're proving my point. These are activists and bureaucrats and people within MDE that are testifying in support of getting money to themselves. And I read that bill. It had an unspecified appropriation with no sunset date or official definition as to what the Interagency Council on Student Attendance was supposed to report back to the legislature. I think that these are the institutional issues that we should be concerned about. The fact that we're coming forward with bills that don't have a cost, a stated cost, they don't have a stated goal or a stated end date, and yet we continue to use more taxpayer dollars because of it. I wasn't going to listen to that because I'm frankly too used to that in this place. Nonsensical ideas that I have no say in that are then expected to pass before me without my vote. So no, I did not listen to those testifiers.
Chair Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't know that they're all bureaucrats. We had many that I listed, a student, youth council coordinator at Allies. So so that actually isn't accurate. Does it say anywhere in the rules that it's okay to leave committee and go to a bar because you're going to give a speech on the floor later?
Isn't that asked and answered?
This is not a court of law, sir.
Well, I'm not a potted plant to represent Brendan Sullivan here. I mean, are we just going to ask and answer the same questions?
It's a different question.
Different question. Representative
Engen. Sorry for the delay here, guys. So what I know about this place is that in many ways it allows for the illusion of representative government. It doesn't always allow for true representative government. There are rules that are expected to be followed, and of which I don't believe I broke any that day. Like I said, called my wife. I took time to use the restroom. I went and ate lunch, and then I continued my work day. But there were several instances in the past of which many of us know about. It's kind of the well-known secrets of this place that there is unethical behavior going on. We have a Senate president who carried and passed legislation appropriating over $6 million to his business partner. We have the chair of the
That's not an answer to the question.
I could go on for literally an hour about true ethics violations that I don't believe have been addressed. And while I'm remorseful for my actions on the early morning of the 27th, to say that I was anything other than official and professional in my duties the day of the 26th is quite frankly wrong. And my work ethics stands for itself.
Chair Mueller.
I think one final question for me, Mr. Chair. So are you saying that you are professional and diligent in your duties when you left committee during a bill presentation, did not return either for that presentation or the next presentation, and went to a bar while the committee was still proceeding? Do you say that is professional and diligent?
Representative Engen.
I would say that it is just as professional and diligent as not showing up to the State of the State address, of which members on both sides didn't, because either they had other obligations or they don't see it fit to sit through a political speech, which in many ways was what was happening in the Education Finance Committee. We didn't have say over those votes. There were no votes. Those bills were laid over for possible inclusion into an omnibus bill. And when you do ask questions and they're not answered, or there's nothing you can do to change it, that doesn't sound like productive use of time or representative government. So yes, I think it is professional to go and take a few moments to call your wife, to use the restroom, to grab lunch before then resuming duties that are actually productive and conducive to my role as a representative.
Chair Mueller. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much, Chair Davids. Representative Ingen, you've stated that you have expressed remorse. Today in this testimony, I'm hearing a lot of rebuttal. When we talk about the work of the committee and representative government, do you believe that representative government requires listening to members of the public?
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So I've been truly remorseful. I've had to look myself in the mirror and know that someday my son is going to Google his last name and he's going to see his dad's most embarrassing time amongst those searches. And that's tough. That's extremely tough. And for a couple of days, I really beat myself up and I was in a really dark place because of that. And then I came to find that that embarrassing moment is also a lesson, and it's a teachable one, not only for him someday, but for myself right now. It's allowed me to be more intentional, more present, and refine me as a. It refined the values and characters of me that are best when I'm at my best self. And so, yes, I'm truly remorseful for that. Now, to your secondary question. Members of the public weren't testifying. We heard that those were nonprofit leaders to which they donate a lot of money to the DFL party, to be quite frank, at Allies amongst them. And then MDE, which we know is over 40% of the state budget, and yet 47% of our kids can read at grade level. They're overseeing that. I didn't see it necessary to listen to their opinions about a bill that would give them more money. After.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So members of the public who make up nonprofits are not participatory in the representative democracy. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. No, what I'm saying is that they're overrepresented in this institution, whereas regular members of the public who are out doing their 9-to-5s, scraping by, hoping that they can put enough gas in the tank or pay their utility bill at the end of the month. They don't typically get to come up here and have a say in the legislation that gets passed. And I think that that's a travesty. And so instead of listening to the people that get overrepresented, the nonprofits that received $2.6 billion in appropriations in 2023 and 2024, I'm not sure that we need to continue to listen to them in the state of what those same nonprofits have overseen in the fraud space as well. So, no, to your question.
Chair Cleaver.
Thank you very much, Chair Davids. So when you show up for work and you come to work every day, do you consider drinking as a normal part of your work day?
Representative Engen.
Drinking alcohol, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I understand where you're getting at. Did I have a singular beer at lunch? Yes, I did, while watching the Twins game and talking with a work colleague about work. I think that that was a normal instance. Now, if you take a look at what happened at Sweeney's not that long ago, that was promoted. I know, I'm talking about it now.
Let's go through the chair here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sweeney's was celebrated for their idea for this bipartisan lunch. If you bring a member of the opposite party and you sit down at a table together, you get both a free meal and a free beer. And several of our members did so. And they did so at lunch before then returning to the floor or the Senate chambers where they would then speak. So under those exact same premises, is that not worthy of an ethics committee violation? I don't think that that is. In fact, I think that that's a good thing. And I think that leaving for an hour in the very little time that we have that's free to go and converse about the duties of that evening's floor session with my friend and colleague, Representative Hudson, I think that that was in within the realm of a professional and normal day.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. You state that you had a beer, but there were empty glasses on the table, beverage glasses for a whiskey drink. Can you please explain to me how those glasses got emptied?
Yeah,
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. There was another person that was present at that table. It was a friend, somebody who works within the Capitol complex, but I can't recall what time that they left. I don't know if that's the same drink that they were having, but I did notice that glass on the table as well. And I can tell you, we didn't have the time to have multiple drinks. We ate I think Representative Hudson had soup. I had a burger, and then I had a beer. And I'm having to litigate this as if it's some sort of a high crime or misdemeanor. I ate lunch.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. You have stated numerous times that the business of the committee had been concluded. However, the adjournment happened several minutes after you left. So there was still ongoing business. You maybe did not find it worth your time, as you've stated, but there was still work of the committee. Do you believe that listening to other legislators gives you any insight into their thinking, or do you believe that, well, I'll just stop that.
Again, we've plowed this ground, Mr. Chairman.
This is not a court of law, Representative Engen.
I understand, but we're wasting further time.
I can
answer the exact same question.
That's okay. I can answer it. Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't see that business comes in the sense that I can't ask questions that get direct answers, that receive direct answers when I ask them. I don't see it as useful that the institution has insulated itself from true thinking, organic thought, and work when it comes to 24-hour amendment rules. If I could change the legislation that was before the committee, rather than have it be laid over and my opinions be nothing other than, you know, just dead words as they were in that committee, as they are in most committees, then I would have stayed. But I have zero ability to change what's in front of the committee or ask questions that get answers to it. So to listen to MDE or nonprofit activists who seek to financially benefit from the bills that are purported to help students and teachers in classrooms, when in reality they're being advanced by people who have kind of a middleman ground and stake to play in that. I don't think that that's a good use of my time or the committee's time.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. I just want to look at the timeline just one more minute, if you can give me a little bit of grace. So we heard in earlier testimony that the Education Committee is a highly sought-after committee. Would you agree with that?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Actually, I was originally on elections, and then due to an inter-caucus agreement, I elected to go on education after it was asked of me. But it might be sought after by other legislators, yeah.
Okay, so
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you so much, Chair David. And you have stated that it controls a large part of our budget. Is that correct?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I believe it was a $2.2 billion education omnibus bill in 2023, and that somehow led to a 35-year record high in teacher layoffs and over 60 unfunded mandates. So, yeah, it's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. I know schools are struggling right now. Yeah.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. And you felt it was more important to go drink a beer instead of listening to the testimony in a budget in a committee that controls the 2.2 budget.
That's the fourth time now, Mr. Chairman, the fourth time that question has been asked.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I'll answer it despite the poking and prodding nature of it. I don't want to listen to the same people who I believe put us into that bad position of a 35-year record high in teacher layoffs, 47% literacy rates amongst our students, and a really bad state of affairs when it comes to our school's budgeting right now. I don't see it necessary or useful to listen to the people who broke the system tell me that they're going to be fixing it with more money to them. So that's why I left.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. And so would you want other members of the committee to leave when you were discussing your priorities?
Representative Engen.
If they had the ability to change what it is that I had put forth in the form of an amendment, in the form of a bill that could be voted on, then I'd like them to tell me if I can refine my bill. But if they don't have that opportunity and they're nothing other than a fly on the wall that imitates a representative government and gives the appearance of that, but in reality their voice carries no weight, then I would invite them and welcome them to leave committee, because they don't, they're not able to do a job that actually represents people.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. So, you know, this committee really should be talking, we should be talking about what ordinary Minnesotans think of our behavior, right? So when an ordinary person goes to work, as we heard in the earlier testimony today, do you think that they're, and I'm talking about ordinary people, right? The people who were serving you that day, did you think it would be appropriate for them to be able to take a break and go have a drink because maybe they didn't want to serve you?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I guess I don't understand the question. This isn't necessarily an ordinary type work style.
So I'm asking you, when you are being paid to do a job, right? You are being paid by the taxpayers to do a job. Do you think the ordinary taxpayer wants you to go out and have a drink?
Have you ever shopped online while at work?
Excuse me.
You haven't been recognized.
I would say, Mr. Chair, Representative, not only do I work an extensive amount of hours, far above and beyond the part-time legislature model that we say we are, but in reality we all know it's a full-time job. I'm extremely grateful to every taxpayer that helps pay for my salary or pay for my per diem. I think that that extends far and above and beyond what I expect. I would do this job for free because I love it so much and I take it so seriously. But simultaneously, I think a reasonable person, an average Minnesotan, would see taking a lunch with a full packed work day in which you have back-to-back committee hearings, I'm sorry, back-to-back-to-back committee hearings, and then a large chunk of time in which bills being heard before a committee can't be voted on and are more of the same problem that Minnesotans find themselves in when it comes to inaffordability and our the state of our schools. I think that they would see it as completely common sense and practical to not want to sit down and be lectured by the same people that broke it.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. This will be my last question, and it's a yes or no question. Do you think the ordinary taxpayer, when they send you to the legislature, expects you to go drink at lunch? It's
ask
a yes or
that's,
no
that's
question.
I'll answer it. So.
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I would say that the average taxpayer is sick and tired of watching as we spend time on political charades like this and not on addressing fraud, which has cost $9 billion. Am I remorseful for the events of the 27th? Yes, I am. And
he's
I own
building
it.
A base.
Completely,
yeah.
I own it. Yeah. I put that onerous on nobody but myself, and I have to live with that shame and with that guilt. But I'm also going to be made better because of it. But I won't be characterized as a bad or as a lazy legislator. I'm simply not those things. I'm not. You can ask my wife. She's like, when are you coming to bed? I haven't seen you in 2 days. These are all commonplace occurrences within our household because I do take my jobs very, very seriously. And there is something self-actualizing about being able to wake up every single day and be able to pick up a phone from a constituent who has a question, whether it's the smallest thing, like they need a light bulb fixed in the street light across from their house, which then you can refer them to a city council member, or if it's somebody who can't get their health insurance to cover a rare cancer screening. These are all phone calls that I've taken and that I've tried to help with. And I think that that's a pretty darn cool job, and I take it seriously. But when the parts of the job that aren't productive, that aren't conducive to good policymaking, are requiring you to sit and continue playing in that charade, I don't play that game. I will leave happily knowing that they can continue to blow hot air without my presence.
Okay, that was your last question. Chair Myers, or Representative Myers.
Oh, I was.
Do you have any more questions?
Well, I just would say that the question was never answered. There was a winding twist, but I ask a yes or no question. Do you believe that the ordinary person expects you to go drink at lunch? Is that what the ordinary person would expect of us?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll be willing to answer it again if that's easier.
No.
Yes,
no.
Yes, no is what I was looking
for. We're out of time for the 15 minutes, but I am going to, as chair, allow Representative Myers to ask questions or questions.
Representative Myers. Thank you, Chair Davids. Representative Ng, I'm just going to have a few questions. And one of those is, you know, how long have you served in the legislature?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers. This is my second term.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. And, you know, during your time in committees, have you seen members leave committee?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers, all the time. I mean, it's as commonplace as it comes, and we've even seen a protest and stage walkout and a boycott of the legislature in 2025 from my colleagues. They didn't show up to work for a month. So yeah, they didn't show up to committee.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. And then I just kind of want to move on to, you know, there's been a discussion about the duties of a legislator, you know, and the work that we do down here. For you outside committee work, what other duties as a legislator do you have?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers. Well, first and foremost is to be a dad and a husband, which I take extremely seriously. Second is to my constituents who are requesting help or assistance with something. We also have to talk with other legislators and colleagues like yourself about bills that we might be working on together or how we can craft them in a way that's conducive to a collaborative and cooperative style agreement. There's tons of work outside of this place.
Yeah. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Davids. You know, given the environment that we've had down here, I mean, there is a lot of work to get stuff done. For you, what's the time mix between the work you're doing to draft, create legislation, build that support versus the time you're spending in a committee?
Representative Engen.
I think that there is less time to truly collaborate in committee about good ideas than the allocated time slot of that committee has. So in other words, when you have a 2-hour committee or you're given maybe an hour and 30 minutes, which I think is typical for some committees, that time is mostly utilized by, you know, political theater from those same bureaucrats or nonprofit executives who are seeking monetary gain instead of cross collaboration between legislators who are asking organic questions. We all have seen the, you know, the talking points that the DFL and the GOP receive before they sit down at a committee hearing, basically telling them, here's why we should say we don't like a bill, here's why we should support our own bills, here's the questions to poke and prod. These are all commonplace occurrences. And I think if we were to get back to a little bit more of an authentic style and a free-flowing one that doesn't, you know, kind of hamstring some of our actions and opportunities to make legislation, I think the place would be better for it. So very little time for true collaboration.
President Myers.
Thank you, Chair David. So is it fair to say that you spend a majority of your time outside of committee preparing? You had made a statement about, you know, the time and effort you put in. So is it fair to say that that time is spent more outside of committee creating those solutions, working with constituents than inside the committees?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers. Yes, 100%. I think if cameras are rolling, politicians are typically playing a little bit more of a charade. They're putting on a show more so than they are actually working. My favorite conversations that I have with members of the opposite party is in the back room when we agree on something and we might vehemently disagree on 95% of things, but we find something that we can work together on. Alex Falconer and I, we couldn't be more different, but we also just did a bill to cap credit card interest rates. And it's fun when I get to do stuff like that. It's fun when I get to see somebody in an elevator that is going to hate me at 2:30 in committee, but we get along great in that little moment. So that's where the real work's done.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative, so in that example, that type of bipartisan effort doesn't necessarily happen a lot in committee. It's more of the work that you do outside those committees.
Rep. Engen.
Yes, that is true.
Okay. No other questions.
Okay. So we're well over the allotted time, but
I can continue to go, Mr. Chair, as long as you guys want.
If, so I think what we do now is we've had ample questioning here, and we're going to take a recess for, Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. So we heard a lot of things in this discussion, but I just kind of want to level set, right? There were lots of statements that have been made, but the question before the body, right? The question before us is, has the public trust been betrayed, and did the activity bring dishonor or disrepute to the House, right? And it's only about the House and our body. So I just want to make sure that I level set that about what we, because there were lots of things that were thrown out that really didn't have anything to do with those, the question before us at this moment. So I just want to make sure that we're level setting that before we take a break.
Mr. Chair, I can answer that. I'd love to answer that.
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I would say that Minnesotans don't trust this institution. It has no honor right now. Like, this is, politicians are as trustworthy as gas station sushi right now for this exact reason. I'm honestly owning up to my mistake that I made on the morning of the 27th. I'm regretful. I am ashamed. I'm sorry. And I'm going to be made better because of it. I know that. But simultaneously, when I'm trying to do authentic good work that is unique, that is written by myself and not just a staffer with an idea thrown at them so that they can put something on a lit piece to say that they should be reelected, I don't want to engage in that anymore. I think that this entire institution should turn away from the inauthenticity that is the House, that is the Senate, that is Minnesota government writ large. And when you see instances to be organic in your work, I take them, and I'm very diligent in how I go about my business here at the House. So I guess to your question, like, of course I'm a good representative. Of course I'm somebody that is upstanding and a reasonable Minnesotan would see as a hard worker.
Chair Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, that wasn't even a question. I was asking a question. I was talking to committee members, our committee members and the public. And I do not see, if we have a low reputation, I don't understand how going out and drinking in the middle of the day is helping improve
you
that.
You didn't show up to work Chair, for a month,
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Okay, we're going to take a 15-minute recess.
Show up to work
we'll come
for a
back
month.
And visit with Representative Hudson. So let's come back here at 11:30. We will reconvene the Ethics Committee hearing, and I would just like to make a couple comments. First of all, mainly on this side of the room, there's mild heckling or comments. That is not necessary. I'll ask the sergeants to remove anybody that participates in that. Also, we are to go through the chairman of the committee to be recognized before anyone speaks. Okay, with that being said, Mr. Hudson, Representative Hudson, if you would join us, please. And, sir, you have 30 minutes to make your presentation.
Chair Davids, Chair Moeller, members of the committee. While I find the contents of the complaint filed against me utterly absurd in its premise, absurd in its speculation, and most importantly, absurd in its presented evidence, I am nonetheless grateful for this opportunity to demonstrate in detail just how frivolous and politically motivated this complaint is. The complaint filed against Representative Engen and I rests on two remarkable premises. It implies that there are two enforceable norms for members of the Minnesota House of Representatives. One, perfect attendance at every moment of every portion of every piece of legislative business, every committee hearing, every floor session, every official proceeding of that business. It's apparently meant to be attended by every member for every second between convening and adjournment. The second implied norm is that no member should consume alcohol during the legislative day. Both of these standards, if they actually exist, will come as a huge surprise to members, lobbyists, legislative staff, and anybody with any proximity whatsoever to how the House actually operates and the conduct routinely displayed and even officially encouraged. The latter half of the complaint bizarrely rests on no premise whatsoever. It merely documents the complainant's wholly unevidenced speculation, asking whether I was carrying a firearm on the House floor, despite no indication I was, and then imagining that my blood alcohol content exceeded the legal limit of 0.04. There is zero evidence to support either of those speculations. In fact, the very blood alcohol chart the complainants submitted actually undercuts their speculation. But before we get into all that, I believe it's important to ground ourselves in the history and purpose of this institution and this ethics committee in particular. The nonpartisan House research memo available online entitled Ethical Issues and the Minnesota House makes it clear that the Ethics Committee exists to address conduct that genuinely violates rules, accepted norms, the public trust, or brings the House into dishonor or disrepute. It emphasizes common sense, proportionality, and a ladder of response that begins with private interventions for most behavioral issues, because many issues do not rise to the level of ethical misconduct. And as was noted by Chair Davids at the outset of these proceedings, it's extremely rare to have these types of hearings. Excluding the 2021 John Thompson matter, which was resolved quickly with a public apology and dismissal, the last time this committee held hearings that led to formal discipline was, well, quite some time ago. I believe you said there's been five since the change of the century. So according to the complainants, therefore, and evidenced by the fact that they saw fit to conceive of, draft, and then actually file the complaint before you today, one of the most consequential ethical developments in the Minnesota House of Representatives in the past quarter century is that two legislators went to lunch and had a beer after cutting short an informational committee hearing. Let me put that into perspective. Since 1996, the House has seen multiple sitting members, including current committee chairs, plead guilty to DWI offenses while in office. Representative Dan Wogemont, who was famously seen on surveillance footage outside a liquor store taking chugs out of a freshly purchased liquor bottle before getting arrested down the road. Representative Byron Curran, who slammed into a median and was so intoxicated that she couldn't properly identify what city she was in. And Senator Tao Zhang, then serving in the House, with two separate DWI convictions. None of these incidents triggered ethics complaints or hearings. Representative Tony Cornish faced multiple accusations of sexual harassment from lobbyists and fellow members, leading to his resignation, but no ethics hearing. Representative Jim Rosberg was charged with felony criminal sexual conduct involving a juvenile. I'll say that again. Charged with felony criminal sexual conduct involving a juvenile. The Ethics Committee at that time deferred action, and the matter never proceeded to a hearing. Representative Arlen Linder made repeated inflammatory floor remarks that many found deeply offensive. Ethics complaints were filed, public proceedings were held, but no discipline was imposed. By the complainant's logic, two Republicans having lunch after an informational committee hearing was apparently more serious and worthy of this committee's time than any of those incidents. Now let's turn to the actual facts of March 26th. The Education Finance Committee held an informational hearing only. All four bills were laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. No votes were taken. Representative Ingen and I each actively participated on the record. Contrary to the demonstrably incorrect claim in the complaint, I remained through the presentation of the final bill, House File 3585, and participated in member discussion on it. There was no further legislative procedure requiring my presence when I stepped out to thread a lunch in between the committee and a scheduled floor session 1 hour later. The baseball game, visible on the televisions in the Basham photo, matches the live broadcast at approximately 2:48 p.m. This was mere minutes before the committee adjourned. There is simply no consistently and uniformly enforced House rule or administrative policy that required us to remain in the committee until adjournment. And as everyone with any proximity to the legislature well knows, members leaving hearings or floor session for a wide variety of reasons, both official and personal, is extremely commonplace. The sole evidence offered is a photograph taken by former House Public Information Services staffer Brian Basham. As a longtime insider, he knows legislative schedules are not a typical 9-to-5 office job. Yet in his inflammatory social media post, he deliberately framed two members taking a lunch break as though we were slacking off from our jobs. He also claimed this was a chance encounter. He just happened to be picking up an order for his food delivery gig. That's convenient. It's also fairly bizarre and raises questions as to why someone who had been earning somewhere between 60 to 70K a year at the House with some of the most extravagant benefits available in the state would be reduced to DoorDash or whatever gig he claims he was engaged in. It's also bizarre that, judged by the angle the photo was taken from and the content of a social media post, he was apparently lingering in the bar area long enough to observe sequential drink orders and monitor our interaction. It's also awfully convenient that the DFL caucus immediately used that photo in their social media and brought it here as an exhibit. I'm sure it had no connection whatsoever with Basham's affinity for the Democrat Party, well documented by him on his own social media accounts. At face value, this does not appear to be neutral evidence. It looks a lot more like partisan opposition research. But strangely, the media never stopped to question it for a second. Just copy and paste. And I hate to bring it up because it truly is embarrassing in this context, but you chose to go forward with this, so I don't have a choice but to point it out. If there truly existed an absolute duty of perfect attendance at every moment of official activity, then one must ask, what ethical standard applied to Representative Ingen and I taking a lunch break that did not apply to the entire House Democrat caucus when they boycotted the legislative session for 3 full weeks at the beginning of this term? The impact was significantly greater. They denied a quorum, paralyzed the House, and collected more than $130,000 in taxpayer salaries while doing so. I guess the important people's work is only so important if Democrats hold power. The idea that having a beer during the legislative day violates accepted norms is further contradicted by the House's own practices. Earlier this season, or this session, Sweeney Saloon publicly offered free po' boy sandwiches and a beer to any bipartisan group of legislators who dined together. Democrat Representative Ethan Shaw announced the promotion on the House floor and distributed flyers to members of both caucuses. No controversy. Multiple members posted photos of themselves on their own social media accounts, some with tall beers visible right in the middle of the photo. And judging by the lighting, their attire, and the times of the posts, these bipartisan shared drinks occurred right in the middle of legislative days. That's strange, isn't it? I mean, if there's this enforced expectation that members never drink during the day during legislative business, why would so many members eagerly document violations of that norm on their own social media accounts? But that's not all. As anyone who operates around here well knows, there are routine happy hours, dinners, and receptions that occur throughout and around the legislative session at all hours of the day, including the recent Minnesota Legislative Society happy hour at Mancini's just this past Tuesday, which went from 4 to 6 p.m., right before a scheduled House floor session at 6, and before the State of the State address. Then there's the upcoming I-90 party that openly distributes free alcohol to members, lobbyists, and legislative staff. Events like this are routinely announced without shame on the House floor, they're celebrated as bipartisan events that everyone looks forward to throughout the session. They've been written about at length in the mainstream media with no apparent concern for any shocking breach of decorum, rules, or ethics or norms. Finally, let me address the laughable speculation in the latter half of the complaint. It's telling that the concerns are asserted as questions rather than factual claims, which inherently means that the complainants have no idea what they're talking about and no evidence to support it. First and foremost, there is no indication that I was carrying a firearm on the House floor, and I have no obligation to disclose whether I was. But even if we were to take my carrying for granted, the complainant's own evidence, the blood alcohol chart, proves that I couldn't possibly have been legally impaired. Two drinks for a man of 6'4" and 250 pounds can't get you to 0.04, and my blood alcohol content would have diminished to negligible amounts by time I was back on the House floor. And of course, both Representative Ingen and I coherently participated in floor discussion over the course of the next 6 hours, multiple times each. The nonpartisan memo calls for common sense and proportionality. Our conduct on March 26 does not meet the threshold of Rule 6.10. Chair and members, I ask that you find no probable cause and dismiss this frivolous complaint. It does not allege and cannot establish any violation of House rule or accepted norm that has been consistently and uniformly enforced. I'm prepared to answer questions relevant to the content of this complaint, but will not be participating in any contrived fishing expedition to uncover evidence that the complainants did not have before drafting and filing their complaint. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hudson. We'll now go to member questions. Member questions, we'll start with the co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, too, obviously, for being here today. You know, you're the beginning, you talked about two norms regarding perfect attendance that would be set with this, or that a member shouldn't consume alcohol during the day. But I just want to be very clear, the way I understand the complaint is not about either of those two norms. It's about the fact that committee hearing was happening, that you were in a committee, you left the committee, and then you went to the bar to watch a game, drink a beer. And so I guess my question for you is, are you acknowledging, are you acknowledging that you did leave committee before it was over?
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. With due respect, Madam Chair, this committee exists for the purpose of enforcing norms. So the question of whether the two premises underlying the complaint are accurate depictions of consistently and uniformly enforced norms in this body is very, very relevant. Am I admitting that I left committee, went to an establishment, had lunch, and that there were two drink orders on my part? Yes. My contention is not that those things did not happen. My contention is that those things are not violations of consistently and uniformly enforced norms in this body.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to be clear, you left during House File 3930's presentation, and then you didn't return for that bill, and then you were gone for House File 3585 and all of those witnesses as well.
Representative Hudson.
Are you asking me to affirm that account?
Yes.
I don't recall the exact time when I left the committee, and I don't find it relevant to the underlying establishment of whether or not I broke norms of this House.
Chair Mueller.
Well, that's the underlying issue with the complaint. So the evidence submitted suggests that you left during 3930, you didn't return, and you were gone for House File 3585, and that at that time, then, you were not present either at that committee and were seen at Sweeney's. You mentioned Sweeney's at Burger Moe's. You did mention Sweeney's Salon and the free lunch offer and the beers that people were drinking at that. Do you have any evidence that those members that partook in that Sweeney's situation left during committee to go have beer?
Representative Hudson.
No, I do not have evidence that they left a committee in order to do that, but that is not an integral component to my argument that neither leaving committee or engaging in the consumption of alcohol during the legislative day violate the norms of this body?
Chair Mueller.
None for now. Thank you.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Similar questions that I had before, Representative Hudson. How long have you served in the legislature?
Hudson.
I was elected in 2022, took the oath of office in 2023, and I'm serving my second term.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And from that time that you've served, have you seen it as common practice for members to leave committee?
Representative Hudson.
It's most certainly common for members to leave both committee and the House floor on a routine basis. In fact, some of you may recall there was an article that was written by Minnesota Reformer reporter Michelle Griffith highlighting the degree, the prevalence of people not being present on the House floor. There was a photo attached to that article that showed, I believe it was Chair Pinto, and I don't remember the other representative, going up and down the rows pushing everybody's button. As you know, we're allowed under the normal course of business when there's not a call of the House to push each other's buttons and vote for each other. And the narrative of the article was highlighting that this is something that happens. One of the things that I noted was that they didn't really ask the question or explore the question, why does it happen? Why does it happen? Why do people feel as though it's not important for them to be sitting in their seats listening to somebody debate? Which is a question that was very heavily leaned upon by your Democrat colleagues on this committee while they were interrogating Representative Ingen. Well, isn't it so vitally important that we sit attentively, full-backed, eye contact, paying rapt attention to every word that is said by any member who's in debate or any testifier who's offering their testimony? If that's true, if that's the expectation, how did the reformer come up with the basis to write that article? And I'll give you the reason. It's not a particularly controversial reason in terms of the conduct of the members. It should be a controversial reason in terms of the structure of this institution. The reason why people are so eager to leave the House floor is because none of it matters. Everybody knows how they're going to vote. It's all been caucused. It's all been pre-programmed. Nobody's going to be convinced by anything that anyone is saying, and we all know it. That is the reason for the continual absence of members from official proceedings. And what they do when they're gone is anybody's business, anybody's guess, but nobody's business. Sometimes it's going to the bathroom. Sometimes it's getting a bite to eat. Sometimes it's taking a phone call. That's why we have a speaker pro tem, and that's why it's very rare to find a chair on the House floor at any given time, particularly this time of the session.
President Myers.
Thank you, Chair Davids. To follow up a little bit on that, from when you were up and not in committee, is it accurate to say those two bills were either laid over or heard informationally?
Representative Hudson.
That is 100% accurate.
Thank you, Chair. And then the final question I have is, outside committee work, what other duties are you performing as a legislator?
Representative Hudson.
Well, I take a lot upon myself that I'm not assigned. This is a job that pretty much is what you put into it and is what you make of it. So a lot of the stuff that I do is community engagement, going to events, traveling the state, talking to people, with a particular emphasis on talking to folks who are not currently politically aligned with my side of the aisle in an attempt to try to develop a relationship and come to a better understanding of their experience so that I can better represent them down here.
President Myers. Chair Claiborne. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go back to three. Chair Mueller. Then we'll go to Chair Claiborne.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just following up on the question about your comment about the House floor and how sometimes members are gone from the House floor. Do you know if those members left the House floor to go to a bar and watch a ball game and drink?
Representative Hudson.
Well, listen, Chair Mueller, perhaps if the process of this proceeding was more in line with typical due process, then I would have had the opportunity to present witnesses who could testify to the number of vodka shooters that they find in the women's restroom off of the retiring room. Unfortunately, I wasn't given that opportunity because you set the last meeting at 4 o'clock on Tuesday to adopt procedures that to that point had not been publicly available and were not presented to me. And then I had until 10 a.m. the following day, less than 24 hours, to anticipate what evidence would be brought against me and submit evidence of my own. In other words, no ability to actually respond to evidence submitted against me. And so perhaps I could have anticipated the relevance of your question and provided that and plenty more evidence that would not be particularly helpful to the direction you're going. Unfortunately, I wasn't given that opportunity.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you did, just for the record, there was an email sent by the committee administrator on Friday night. We're trying to find the time because we did want to give you extra time in the weekend because we knew we weren't going to be coming to that first committee. So you were given advance notice. The other people for whom complaints were filed did present evidence. And if you had asked for any sort of grace to bring some today or allow more time, you could have asked for that and you did not. It was sent at 3:39 on Friday the 24th.
Bishop Hudson.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to respond to that. What was sent on Friday was an indication of when the hearing would be. And that what may have been included in that email, but most certainly was part of the proceedings here on Tuesday, was the fact that both the accusers and the respondents were going to have the same deadline for submitting evidence. I'm not quite sure how somebody who's responding to an accusation can submit evidence on the same timeline of the people who are accusing him when you don't know what it is that they're bringing to bear.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, you could have asked for any kind of clarification. We did what we did based on past ethics hearings. And the answer was the complaint itself and the evidence submitted, you could have presented any evidence to respond to the things that you received in writing. So I would like to get back to the issue at hand here. Did you receive permission from either of the chairs of the Education Finance Committee to be excused?
Representative Hudson.
No.
Chair Mueller.
And are you aware of any rules that say it is okay to leave committee because a bill is going to be laid over and not voted on?
Representative Hudson.
Our rules are not structured in that fashion. They do not tell us what we're allowed to do.
Chair Mueller. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and I'll try to be very good about going through the chair. So,
I wasn't referring to you.
Okay. Representative Hudson, could you please tell me, how did you get back to the Capitol from Bergamo's?
Representative Hudson.
I do not recall.
Chair Claiborne.
You have no idea how you got from Bergamo's to the Capitol? Is that what you just said to me?
Representative Hudson.
In a context where we are here 4 or 5 days a week and we make multiple trips through multiple methods, sometimes through rideshare, sometimes riding with someone else, sometimes driving ourselves, you are asking me to remember the specific transportation mode that I utilized over a month ago. I think it's reasonable to say I'm not sure.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. I find that hard to believe, given the events of that day and the fact that you were able to tell us what you had to drink that day and what you consumed that day. I would think, knowing how you got, it's a car ride of 7 minutes, to have some idea of how you got there. I find that hard to believe.
Well, I can give you options. It was one of two things. It was either I drove myself or I rode along with Representative Engen, or the other way around.
Chair Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, are you saying that one of you had a car?
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you very much.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much. Can you please tell me, Representative Engen referenced a third person at the table. Do you recall who that third person was? Was it a friend, a colleague, a lobbyist?
Representative Hudson.
I don't remember specifically who it was, but it was definitely someone who works in the Capitol space who happened to be there coincidentally and stopped to speak with us for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. Was it the same individual who was with you later in the day?
Representative Hudson.
I'm going to, out of grace, I'm going to answer this question, but this is the last time I will be making any reference to events that are outside the scope of this complaint. No, it was not.
Thank you.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. Representative Hudson, do you believe that the public expects us to go drink in the middle of a committee hearing?
Representative Hudson.
My beliefs are not relevant to the business of this committee. I didn't receive an ethics complaint alleging that I have inappropriate beliefs. I received an ethics complaint alleging that I violated the established norms of this House. The way we know they're established is that they're consistently and uniformly enforced. My contention is that the conduct of myself and Representative Ingen on March 26th in relation to official business was not a violation of the established norms that are consistently and uniformly enforced in this House.
Chair Claiborne.
Representative Hudson, do you believe that the public trusts us to come to committee meetings when we are assigned to be in committee?
Representative Hudson.
Once again, perhaps taking a little more time this time, I will point out that my beliefs are not on trial here. My beliefs are not relevant to this proceeding. The question is whether or not facts have been evidenced to establish probable cause of violating the established norms and rules of this House.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. The question before the body today is, have the actions you've taken betrayed the public trust? I did not ask you what your beliefs were. I asked you if your behavior defied the public's trust in us to attend committee meetings when we are assigned time to be in committee.
Representative Hudson.
Contrary to how you just restructured the question, you did in fact inquire as to what my belief was. That said, in reference to the second way you framed it, again, this is not an issue of whether or not I believe or what I might anticipate about what other people believe. It is about whether, in fact, according to the norms of this House, which are established by the consistently and uniformly enforced standards of behavior that are seen by members on the daily, whether or not what I specifically did on that date violates those norms. If you're going to make the case that it does, boy, oh boy. If you're going to make the case that the public trust is violated whenever a member of the legislature isn't at the legislature, get ready for a lot more of these, because they're coming.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. Representative Hudson, you understand at this time of the year there are a lot of negotiations that occur between the House and the Senate. And is it a factual statement that sometimes people are absent from the floor because they are in conference committee or they are negotiating a deal between the House and the Senate to get bills across the finish line?
Rev. Hudson.
Yeah, that's true. That does happen.
Thank you.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And do you think that the public expects legislators to listen to opposing views in this body?
Representative Hudson.
I would agree with the statement that a lot of the public proceeds under the misconception that that's what we're doing here. As I've established, it's not.
Chair Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, I would ask that the testifier not impugn the motives of other people. Just because the testifier may or may not participate fully in committees does not mean that all members are not doing this. So I just, because that is not my norm, I just want to state that. Can you please tell me, Representative Hudson, what time you arrived at Burger Mo's?
Representative Hudson.
I did not take the time to glance at a clock whenever it was that I arrived. But I want to address what you just said, implying that I was expressing my singular attitude as opposed to reflecting the very evident structure of how this institution works. Again, as I pointed out, it has been broadly observed and written about in the mainstream media that there is brought. You mean to tell me two rows of legislators are off doing official business related to end of session negotiations? I don't think so. You want to tell me when half the floor is empty or more on the routine that everybody's out there hammering away negotiating? I don't think so. You want to tell me that we don't know, that we don't caucus? What are we doing in the caucus room? We don't know how people are going to vote? We don't have whips? What are they whipping, if not votes? My point is the fact that we have a 24-hour amendment rule that prohibits legislators from walking across the aisle and saying, you know what, you just made a good point. Maybe we should submit an amendment that actually changes this and makes it better. The way this institution is structured incentivizes disengagement. That's my point.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have referenced that you had two drinks. Did you have any food?
Representative Hudson.
Yeah, I had a bowl of soup.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Mueller. Oh, I'm sorry. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. This goes back to what the public may or may not expect of us. So do you, in your opinion, I'll ask it that way, do you believe the public wants a legislator to leave committee to go and watch a ball game in the middle of the day and consume alcohol? And that's a yes or no answer.
Rep. Hudson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were wasting time because I heard the same question for the third time, so I thought I'd participate in the trajectory of the discourse. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give you my answer for a third time.
Chair Claiborne.
Was that a refusal to answer? I just want to make sure I have...
Rep. Claiborne, he's asked her three times.
No, I didn't ask about a ball game earlier.
Oh, there's a ball game element
I
now,
asked
too.
About watching
okay, so was, now that the ball game's part of it...
It was the Twins opener that was referenced.
Representative Hudson.
Sure. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to take some time to think about this now that you've introduced the crucial element of the ball game in this. I think what this evidence is quite clearly is the frivolousness and the complete lack of seriousness that undergirds this entire complaint. I am now taking questions about what I had to eat and what was on the TV in reference to public trust and established norms and the rules of this institution. I go back to what I said at the end of my presentation. This must be found without probable cause and dismissed. It is perhaps, I'll have to go back and check, perhaps one of the silliest complaints, certainly in reference to other documented member behavior that this committee has ever been burdened with.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will just ask this last question. Because the public does pay us to come here and to do our work, and the public does pay us per diem to pay for our food and drink while we are at the Capitol, I would like to know, did you take per diem for the day that you left committee early and drank and watched the ball game?
Representative Hudson.
I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to tell you exactly why. It's coming from one of 67 members of this body that refused to show up to work for nearly a month and got paid for it. To try to bring per diem another petty concern into this conversation in that context. And I already warned you this was coming. I already mentioned it, that you have no leg to stand on here with this attendance standard. And yet you go back to it again. Odd choice. Thanks for the last question.
Okay, Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just because of what was the claims that were made about due process, I would like to read the email into the record that was sent on April 24th, 2026 at 3:40 to Representative Hudson from the committee administrator, with your permission, Mr.
Certainly.
Chair. I'm sending this, Representative Hudson, I'm sending this email on behalf of Chair Davids and Chair Mueller. We are writing to inform you that the House Ethics Committee is scheduled to meet on Tuesday, April 28th at 4 p.m. to adopt ethics procedures. A public notice will be posted today. Your presence is not necessary at this hearing. Although the procedure has not been adopted yet, you may find it helpful to review the attached document from Nonpartisan Research, see appendix starting on page 10. At the hearing, we will also inform the parties and public about the probable cause hearing that will be held on Friday, May 1st at 10 a.m. The Ethics Committee will hear arguments from complainants and respondents for all three ethics complaints. A formal agenda for the May 1st hearing will be emailed to the representatives and any counsel early next week. Please provide the contact information for any counsel you may have to the committee administrators, Ellen McDaniel and Casey Peterson, as soon as possible. The committee is asking that the parties submit evidence, briefs, or other relevant documents for consideration by 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 29th. Please reach out to both Casey and Ellen if there are any questions regarding the hearings. This information will also be shared with the complainants. Signed by your two co-chairs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Davis. Just two follow-up questions, Rep. Hudson. Is it common practice for legislators to leave Capitol grounds to do things like prepare for floor sessions, you know, future bill presentations and other duties that they have as a role as a legislator?
Representative Hudson.
Before I answer that question, I just want to thank Chair Mueller for reading that email into the record and clearly demonstrating the points that I earlier made. The attachment to that email was the document that I did reference in my presentation. It was not the procedures, and it reiterates the fact that the deadline for evidence submission was the same for both the complainants and the respondents. But to your question, of course it's routine for legislators to be anywhere and everywhere in the conduct of doing their job. Again, as everyone who has any association with this body knows, with this building knows, we don't hold, we talk about this as work. We sometimes refer to it in shorthand as a job. None of us with election certificates at the Minnesota House of Representatives has a job. We hold an office. That office does not close. It does not have posted hours. We are holding that office when we're out with our constituents, when we're having a meeting with a member of the public, when we're talking to a lobbyist or another legislator. And those types of encounters occur anywhere and everywhere. They are not confined either by rule or accepted norm to these House grounds.
So Myers,
that's it.
Any other questions from Chair Claiborne or Chair Mueller? Okay. So with that, we have our member questions. We will go into recess. We will report back to this room at 1 p.m. Any questions from members or staff? Okay, all right, I gotta say recess, not adjournment. We are in recess till 1 o'clock p.m. The hour of 1 o'clock having arrived, we will reconvene the Ethics Committee meeting. Our next order here is the complainants, Representative Igo and Schultz, have 30 minutes for your presentation, and then Representative Falconer will have 30 minutes for his presentation. There'll be 15 minutes of member questions, and then for anyone that's here, after that time, the room will be cleared, and the Ethics Committee will go into executive session at that point. So with that, Representative Igo, Representative Schultz, if you could present the case here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard today. I'm here to present a narrow ethics question grounded in statute and House rules. I'm not asking this committee to evaluate policy positions, motives, or political advocacy. I'm asking the committee to determine whether the documented conduct in the record is consistent with Minnesota Statute 3.084 and House Rule 6.10. I would like to read Statute 3.084 before I proceed, which is the lobbying activities prohibited. So subdivision one definition, as used in this section, lobbying means engaging in activities that would require an individual to register as a lobbyist, as defined in section 10A.01, subdivision 21. Prohibition, a sitting member of the legislature is prohibited from accepting employment with or otherwise receiving compensation for services performed from One, a business whose primary source of revenue is derived from lobbying, government relations, or government affairs services. Two, a business whose primary source of revenue is derived from facilitating government relations or government affairs services between two third parties. Or any other business that employs or contracts with lobbyists, government relations, or government affairs professionals, if the member's job duties include acting in that capacity or providing direct or indirect consulting, advice, or administrative support for that work. And finally, this prohibition applies regardless of the location where the work of the business is substantially conducted or its clients are located. The House of Representatives and the Senate must adopt rules to enforce this section. So I'll now proceed in four parts: the rule, the facts and the record, how those facts intersect with the rule, and finally, what I'm asking the committee to decide. The rule. Minnesota Statute 3.084 is clear in its purpose and scope. It prohibits the sitting legislator from accepting employment or compensation from a business engaged in lobbying or government relations activities if the legislator's duties include acting in that capacity or providing direct or indirect consulting advice or support. The statute further makes clear that this prohibition applies regardless of where the governmental body being lobbied is located. State versus federal jurisdiction does not change the analysis. Conduct does, not labels. House Rule 6.1 gives this committee authority to address and conduct that, and to address conduct that violates House rules, accepted norms of House behavior, betrays the public trust, or tends to bring the House into dishonor or disrepute. Again, without any requirement of proving criminal intent. Two, the record evidence. The record before the committee reflects the following undisputed points. First, Representative Alex Falconer was a sitting member of this body at all relevant times. Second, Representative Falconer disclosed paid employment with the Northeastern Minnesotans for Wilderness, an advocacy organization. Public organizational materials and websites describe his role not merely as advisory, but as a federal government relations manager. That title has a common and ordinary meaning. It denotes direct engagement with government officials to influence public policy and outcomes. Third, in 2024, Representative Falconer was registered as a lobbyist for that same organization and filed reports affirmatively stating that he attempted to influence legislative action. While that registration was later terminated, the statute does not make legality depend on current registration status. It depends on conduct that constitutes lobbying or government relations activity. Fourth, while employed by this advocacy organization, Representative Falconer chief authored and advanced multiple bills that the same organization actively supported and lobbied for, according to the organization's own materials and sign-on letters. The record reflects a pattern of close alignment between paid advocacy priorities and legislative activity. Finally, and most directly, the record includes an April 15, 2026 email sent by Representative Falconer to multiple United States Senate offices. And I want to make mention, too, that email was sent after a formal ethics complaint had been filed. In that communication, Representative Falconer, one, identified himself explicitly as Minnesota State Representative. Two, urged a specific vote outcome on pending federal legislation. Three, stated that he was leading legislative efforts on the issue. And four, offered to engage directly with Senate staff or senators to discuss the matter further. This email is not passive commentary. It is targeted outreach to government officials urging a particular legislative action, paired with an offer of continued engagement. It matches almost exactly the role publicly attributed to Representative Falconer by his employer. The statute that we've previously mentioned, Statute 3.084, does not ask this committee to decide whether Representative Falconer supports environmental protection, nor whether such advocacy is popular or justified. It asks a narrower question. May a sitting legislator accept compensation for performing government relations or lobbying functions directly or indirectly while serving in office? The record shows paid employment with an advocacy group, a role publicly defined as government relations, prior acknowledged lobbying activity, legislative actions aligned with employers' lobbying efforts, and contemporaneous outreach to federal officials urging legislative action while invoking legislative authority. Taken together, these facts raise a serious and reasonable question about whether the statutory prohibition has been respected. This is not about a single email or a single bill. It is about a role overlap, simultaneously functioning as a legislator and a compensated government relations advocate. I'm not asking this committee to draw conclusions about intent, good faith, or character. Reasonable people may disagree on policy. That is not the issue. I'm asking the committee to determine whether the conduct reflected in the record is consistent with the letter and spirit of Minnesota Statute 3.084 and the ethical standards and public trust obligations articulated in our House rules to bring about this ethics committee. If the statute is to have meaning, it must apply when the role of legislator and paid government advocate are blurred in practice, not only when labels are used formally. In closing, I respectfully ask the committee to apply the statute and House rules to the facts as documented and to determine whether corrective action or guidance is warranted to preserve the integrity of this situation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Igo. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I will only add in support of Representative Igo's explanation here, and in specific to mention, which is in reference to our specific complaint before you, the direct actions that were taken, and highlight for the record that it's clear that there's a picture here where there's a point where we're looking at a situation where his employment with Northeastern Minnesotans for Wilderness could be a direct payment for his work that he has taken action on in his letter presented to the committee. And so the Save the Boundary Waters Coalition is a coalition underneath the purview and in coordination with Northeast Minnesotans for Wilderness. And with that before the body, it's an open question as to whether his actions as a legislator are being directly being paid for by his employer. And that is the question before this committee, which is why we're here today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Schultz. So we will now go to questions. 15. Oh, we probably should hear from Representative Falconer first. That would be good. That'd be good. I apologize for that, Representative Falconer. Okay, respondent, Representative Falconer, you and counsel, if you have counsel, have 30 minutes for presentation. I apologize for that. Who would like to start?
I will. Thank you,
Representative.
Sir. Yep. Yeah. Thank you for coming today. I'm sorry that we're here, but we'll go through the process. I'm actually going to start and let Attorney David Zoll here start out, and I'll speak in a little bit.
Please state your name for the record.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. David Zoll of the law firm Lockridge Grindle Nowen, appearing today on behalf of Representative Falconer. The complaint before this committee should be dismissed. It alleges that, with scant evidence, that Representative Falconer violated House Rule 910 by receiving compensation for lobbying while serving in the legislature. I want to be clear, that's the violation alleged in the complaint. That's the rule that's cited. And that rule simply says you may not receive compensation for lobbying. Representative Falconer is not a lobbyist. He's not required to register as a lobbyist under the provisions of Minnesota Statute Chapter 10A. You will hear from him regarding his role with Northeastern Minnesotans for Wilderness and understand why it is that he has not violated any rules or norms of this body in engaging in his work on behalf of that organization. Even a cursory investigation would have recognized that he's not a lobbyist. He's not registered as a lobbyist in Minnesota, nor federally. This reveals, in a sense, there's no basis for the complaint, but moreover, even if Representative Falconer were a federal lobbyist, and he's not, the complaint would fail because the prohibition on lobbying activities applies to state activity. And again, if you read the language of 3.084 more broadly, as I heard complainants suggest you should, you'll hear from Representative Falconer as to why his work with Northeastern Minnesotans for Wilderness on behalf of the Save the Boundary Waters campaign is completely consistent with the expectations established in Minnesota law. The complaint also alleges more generally that Representative Faulkner violated House Rule 610 by authoring legislation that is supported by the campaign to save the boundary waters. But let's be clear about something. That legislation is supported by numerous organizations. If we look at the bills addressing the protection of wild rice in the state of Minnesota, you have organizations, over 50 organizations, in addition to the campaign to save the boundary waters, that signed on in support of enacting legislation intended to protect Minnesota's wild rice. He's not here as a legislator to carry the water for the campaign to save the boundary waters or any other organization. He's here to represent the voters who elected him from District 49A, who understand his deep personal connection to the boundary waters. He campaigned on this issue. It was front and center in his campaign. The voters of District 49A knew who they were electing, and they knew that they were electing an advocate that would come before this body and advocate for the protection of the boundary waters. And that's what he did. He's not, again, here carrying out some directive from some other organization. He's here doing the work of advocating for something that has been important to him throughout his entire life. He authored the legislation that's addressed in the complaints because those are the issues he campaigned on, the issues the voters elected to him to address. He does not bring dishonor upon this body by authoring this legislation. He is doing what voters expect legislators to do. They campaign. They tell you who they are. They tell you who they believe in, what they believe in, and what matters most. And when you're elected, voters expect you to come to the legislature and to advance efforts to do what you promised to do on the campaign trail. In this case, it's protecting the boundary waters and protecting Minnesota's natural resources and environment. That's precisely what he did. This is not dishonorable conduct. It is standing that on its head. This is honorable. This is what legislators are expected to do. And we should be clear about what complainants' assertions would mean for Minnesota. If you read the complaint and what they have to say about the prohibitions in 610 and how that applies to advancing legislation, this is a citizen legislature where members bring their personal and professional expertise to serve the people of Minnesota. Teachers advance legislation relating to education. Farmers advance legislation relating to ag policy. Hunters and fishermen advance legislation supporting game and wildlife regulations, and nurses advance legislation on health care. Not because it benefits them personally. It's because that is the area that they're passionate about, that they have the knowledge, that they have the experience and expertise to come and do the work on behalf of the state of Minnesota. If you take the position stated in the complaint to its logical conclusion, heck, you don't even have to get to its logical conclusion. You only have to go as far as the complaint itself. Representative Warwas would not be able to advance legislation addressing mining policy or benefits, unemployment benefits for miners like himself, because it relates to his profession. It relates to his employer. His employer might like the mining regulations that he's advancing. Certainly, other miners, including himself, might appreciate the opportunity to have greater unemployment benefits. If what we hear is that you can't do anything that relates to your own personal interest or the interest of your employer, this body would shut down, because voters expect people to bring that personal experience to the legislature when they do their work. Similarly, Rep. Steyer would not be able to advance legislation that provides funding for public safety agencies. Of course he should be able to do that. He's a police chief. He knows what the demands and needs are on law enforcement agencies in Scott County, Carver County, and across the state of Minnesota. We expect that people with knowledge and expertise bring that to this body and advance that work here. We should also acknowledge that this complaint does not arise in a vacuum. It was not filed with this committee in 2025 when Rep. Faulkner first introduced the legislation that's raised in the complaint or conducted hearings relating to two of the bills that are referenced in the complaint. Instead, It was hastily assembled in the hours after the complaints against Representatives Engen and Hudson were announced. This is not coincidental. It was intended to distract rather than raise serious concerns. Serious concerns, allegations against Representative Faulkner's conduct. And it's precisely because this meritless complaint questions Representative Faulkner's integrity, his reputation, his ethics. It's precisely because that is what this complaint is attacking that it's important that the committee to hear from Representative Faulkner himself. You will hear from him and you will understand his commitment to protecting Minnesota's environment and his commitment to serving the residents of District 49A. And he can tell you exactly what the ordinary Minnesotans who elected him to the legislature think about his work on these issues. And with that, I'll turn it over to my client, Representative Faulkner.
Representative Faulkner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you again for being here. I was elected in November 2024 to represent the residents of Minnetonka and Prairie in District 49A, and I take that honor and privilege seriously. And when I won with a little more than 20% margin, I was given the mandate by my district to work on the values I presented and issues I promised, which, as stated in the response brief, I literally did campaign with a canoe on my car. Anybody that's like, oh, what is he going to do? It was evident. Protecting the boundary wires was the top three issue, if not the top issue amongst everything else I campaigned on. The voters know my employment background. They know I intended to bring the experience and expertise gained to be their voice in this building. To the best of my ability, I've been working every day to serve my community in the ways that I said I would, living up to the promises, including protecting the boundary waters from America's most toxic industry. I work as ethically as I do passionately. I have the utmost respect for the Minnesota House and this committee. And to be honest, my immediate reaction was that I wanted to file retaliatory ethics complaints of my own. But I chose not to because we don't need to escalate the division amongst members. More than one Republican member has actually come up to me, thanked me for my restraint in not escalating matters, and with one saying, no action around here goes without a reaction. Guess you're it. If the same restrictions that they are trying to impose on me applied to all members of the House, like Mr. Zoll said, the work of this body would grind to a halt. I really do feel like that's the benefit of the Minnesota State Legislature. We are citizen legislators, and we bring our own experience, our job, our life experience, and perspectives here. But since my outside employment is being scrutinized, I just want to take a moment here to explain what the organization is that I work for, the nature of my work, and how I've used an abundance of caution to avoid ethics violations both with my work at NMW and in the legislature. I'll start with NMW and how it intersects with the coalition branded as the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters. So back in 2015, that's when my work began with NMW. After then, the leaseholder Duluth Metals leases had expired and Antofagasta bought the company for $79 million and was going through the process of then trying to get the leases renewed. There was a window of time where these discretionary leases could be denied renewal, but a lot of work had to go into it to prove that case. That's when NMW started the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters, which now is represented by over 400 businesses, organizations, associations working at every angle we can think of to protect our wilderness. I was drawn to this work out of pure personal passion and as a lifetime of wilderness travels. My first trip as an infant with my grandpa, I don't even remember. And I love more than anything that we were able to just bring our kids and my wife's parents last summer on a three-generation trip. This place means more to me than anyone can fathom, and it is my life's work to protect the boundary waters on behalf of the clear majority of Minnesotans and an even more of a majority of my constituents. I'm working for my children, and should I be lucky enough, for my grandchildren someday. I'm working for Minnesotans and tribes, for tribal members who live in my district but whose ancestral lands are now at risk, working for hunters and anglers, for the small Maine businesses in Ely and Grand Marais, for Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, church groups, school groups across Minnesota and the country, and I'm working for everyone who values the integrity of our public lands. NW, as the organization that I work for, has many facets to it besides leading the campaign to save the Boundary Waters. A quick summary of other things NMW works on: water quality, science, and monitoring. They're actually suing the Minnesota DNR, regional economic revitalization efforts and community support work. They work with the United States Forest Service on endangered species, invasive species, prescribed burns, forest management plans. They work with disadvantaged communities, veterans, schools, churches, scouts, getting them into the wilderness. Give presentations to community groups on a variety of topics. I myself, as an employee of MW, have taught a class on how to chase and photograph the Northern Lights, and another about the border route and Kekakaba hiking trails in the wilderness. I've worked with NMW for more than a decade, and my job may be hard to distill down to one title, but it touches on all of the above and more, also including fundraising, communications, staff development, technology purchases, and more. I've held 6 different titles throughout the years as our staffing grew and main responsibilities kind of shifted around. So we've established that's the overall work of NMW. A lot of things going on there. And as I stated, NMW leads the coalition brand as the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters. And this is a common practice that for organizations that work on a multiple of issues. An example being Sierra Club runs the Beyond Coal campaign. One could work for Beyond Coal, but their paycheck comes from the Sierra Club. It's similar here. One could be seen as publicly branded as working for the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters, but they're officially employees of NMW. My role with Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters, I think, could best be served as senior advisor. My institutional knowledge of every aspect of the organization lends itself to, in every which direction. We don't have a typical corporate structure of you do this, you do that, siloed walls and departments. With some exceptions, everyone does a little bit of most everything. My main day-to-day is staff leadership guidance, overall strategy and planning, and a lot of cross-organizational and community education and information sharing. So it's hard to pin down exactly what my job description is. Every day is different, but one thing is clear: I'm not a lobbyist. Did I used to be? Sure. But as has been outlined, that registration was terminated. I am no longer a lobbyist. The transition, so now transitioning my legislative work here with things that NMW supports. Start with the wild rice. I mean, I brought the wild rice bills because tribal members through Rise and Repair Coalition came to me about this and asked me to do it, not NMW. Constituents through Interfaith Power and Light also asked me to do so. Tribal members who live in my district asked me to do so. And I've been harvesting rice for years. It's another thing I care deeply about, and so I was more than happy to take it on. NMW, to my knowledge, has done nothing more than sign the letter along with 50 or so other organizations. And honestly, I didn't even know they signed the letter until it was included in this complaint. NMW has had no role in my decision to work on the wild rice bills. On the Boundary Waters issues, even if I didn't work for NMW, I would have fought tooth and nail, or maybe use a different phrase, I would have fought paddle and canoe to be the author of the Boundary Waters Protection Bill. It's my absolute passion. It's a legacy I carry from my grandfather, and I'll pass it on to my kids, and as long as I'm able. This issue comes to me from a lifetime of passion and experience and is informed by the past decade of my professional life. Just as teachers and principals here frequently legislate or vote on education matters, law enforcement officers legislate or vote on public safety matters, insurance brokers legislate on insurance matters. Again, none of those examples are an ethical problem, and I don't believe mine is either. It's actually what makes this place work best for the people of Minnesota, and is how I plan to continue legislating should voters agree that I should return next year. And just something echoed from earlier, when my kids Google my name, you know, I just want them to know that I fought for what I believe in. And when my ethics were questioned, I want them to know and to see that I didn't back down or abandon my closely held beliefs. So with that, I'll return time to my attorney.
Thank you, and I'll just briefly conclude because you heard from Representative Faulkner, and I don't need to repeat his statements nor my own. We ask that the committee dismiss, or I guess if we, you know, follow the procedural rules, find that there's no probable cause that there was any violation of Minnesota House ethics rules, because there is no support for those allegations. Representative Faulkner has acted consistently with the expectations of voters, with the expectations of this body, and with the expectation of the rules adopted by the Minnesota House. He is doing, as I've said, and I know I said I wouldn't repeat myself, but this is worth remembering, he's doing exactly, precisely what the voters of District 49A elected him to do. He's advocating for protection of Minnesota's environment generally and the Boundary Waters Canoe Area specifically, and he's doing that not because anyone asked him to. Let me correct that. Not because anyone other than the voters of District 49A asked him to. He's doing it because these are issues he cares about deeply. And for these reasons, we respectfully request that the committee find that there's no probable cause of a violation of health ethics rules. Thank you.
I guess I want to clarify something on one of the exhibits here from the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, Appendix 2. We see that you filed as a lobbyist 1-1 of 24. When we removed from lobbying, what date?
I think the report says by the end of the year. I don't remember when it is that I specifically submitted it, but the complainants also acknowledged that my lobbying had been terminated as of the end of 2024. So well before I was sworn in as a lawmaker.
Okay, let's go to member questions. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Representative Faulkner. Some of the questions may be a little repetitive from what you said, but I just I want to clarify a few things. So first, how long have you served in the legislature?
Faulkner. No, thank you, Chair. I was just elected. This is my first term, so 15 months.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, and is it correct you stated you started your employment with Northeastern Minnesotans for Wilderness, and we'll just go with that, NMW, in 2015?
Yeah, and
Faulkner?
Yeah, yes, thank you. And please refer to it as NMW. It's a very long name. Yeah, 2015, beginning of 2015 is when I started with NMW.
Representative Myers?
Thank you, Chair. And Representative, are you still being paid by them?
Representative Faulkner?
I'm on, while I serve in the legislature, I'm on a leave of absence. When the session is over and we take I'll take a little bit of a break to breathe, then I will return to working there. So I'm currently off the books.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And Representative Faulkner, what are your job duties? I know you talked about it a little bit, and I know it's not going to be all inclusive, but if you could kind of restate that.
Yeah.
Representative Faulkner?
Yep, sorry. Thank you, Chair. My job duties are, this is funny, I knew I was going to have to respond to this, and even so, it's still kind of hard. It's very all-encompassing. There's a lot of staff development work. You know, I've been working with the campaign now for more than a decade. Every detail with regards to sulfate or copper mining and its impact to the Boundary Waters is lodged firmly in my head, and it will never leave. So a lot of staff training, a lot of organizational and community support. I mean, so NMW and the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters has over 400 members, and they come from all over the country. For example, the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. So one of my duties at one point was to go to Park City, Utah, and meet with them and tell them about the Boundary Waters and why it needs to be protected. So there's a lot of cross-organizational work information sharing and education, and also learning. If they're working on similar issues in other parts of the country and something worked here, didn't work there, you know, it's a shared community of allies. I think that's probably day to day more in line with what I do. But like I said, there's so much. I mean, I've done some of the water quality science. I do some of the fundraising. I do some of the communications. I'm the one that purchases the organization's laptops. Lucky me. So I do kind of a lot.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. And so do your job responsibilities change when you're in session versus when you're not in session at the legislature?
Representative Faulkner.
Just for clarification, in session meaning like gavel in, out?
Representative Myers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Representative Faulkner?
No job duties. Because I'm a legislator right now.
Representative Myers?
So, thank you, Chair. So, for the record, between when legislation is going on, you don't do anything. The legislative session is going on, after that time is when your job duties kick back in.
Representative Faulkner?
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Myers?
So, thank you, Chair. So, we talked, previous here about the view of the public, what the public's thinking, the view of what other advocate groups, what other lobbyists, organizations down here are thinking. A question I would have for you is, did you ever consider not being the chief author of some of these bills because of who you were employed with and how that would look to the public or other people that work down here?
Representative Faulkner.
Thank you, Chair. I did consider it. We've had other authors before, but given this moment in time, the wilderness needs somebody who's leading this bill that can be the absolute expert. And I'm incredibly confident that there's nobody in this body that knows more about sulfur copper mining's negative impacts to water quality and what it would do to the boundary waters. And so it was imperative to me to live out the mission of my life's passion. To be the author of the bill. Sure, I could have been, a co-author, but then in the fantastical scenario of this session that we would have gotten a hearing, I wouldn't have been the one necessarily presenting. It would have, there's a structured process. The author does most of the work, most of the legwork. And so that's what I intend and want to do on this bill.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Faulkner. And then also a similar question. So we had an email here dated October 15th coming from you with a lot of signatures, and this email went out after the ethics complaint. Again, maybe how the public and other people look at this, was there any thought in your mind to maybe not be the person that would spearhead this?
Yep, thank you. Just a correct record, it was April 15th.
Sorry,
I believe you said October 15th, which stuck out to me because it's my wife's birthday. To author the letter took somebody that would know just so much. Things move so quickly. I found that I'm just able to write what was needed to be done. I've also, before working for NMW, coalition building and organizing was what I worked in, and it's one of the things I do. And so reaching out to other colleagues in both the House and the other chamber to sign on the bill is just a natural part of what I wanted to do. And I just felt it as part of the overall mission that I should be the one as the bill author to then also write that letter and request supportive signatures.
Thank you, Chair. And more of just maybe a statement. I know we try not to get in too much of intent and why people are doing things. And for the record, I believe it was your attorney, sorry, I can't remember your last name, but talked about the retaliatory nature of this complaint. Are you guys aware of a news article that came out April 6, 2026, that was written about a potential conflict of interest?
To the attorney?
Chair Davids, Representative Myers, I am not aware of any such article, and it certainly was not included in any of the materials provided to this committee.
Okay. Representative Myers?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I want to make sure that, we're talking about motives sometimes and things, and I think there's other things that have happened. So to say specifically why people are doing things, we're trying to deal with some of the factual evidence that's put in front of us. I think right now, I think that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Representative Myers, Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I just have a few questions. I want to make sure that I understood and heard you correctly. So during the legislative session, you were on leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that, did I hear you say you received no compensation?
Representative Faulkner?
I think, as a matter of, I started out taking PTO just to help bridge the gap for a paycheck. So that would be the only compensation. It wasn't compensation for actively doing work. It was, you know, we don't earn a lot in this building, still need to pay the bills. And so I cashed out a chunk of my PTO.
I just want to clarify that.
Sir, Representative Claiborne.
Thank you. Paid time off. So this was vacation time that you had earned during your normal working hours. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct.
Representative Faulkner.
Thank you.
That is correct.
Chair right. Claiborne.
Thank you so much. And I just, in listening to you describe your job duties as all-encompassing, staff development, organizational, IT, organizing volunteers, would you consider your job description kind of as a nonprofit generalist?
Representative Faulkner?
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty accurate description.
Chair Claiborne.
Right, thank you. And then I just want to make sure that you called this you call the boundary waters your life's passion. Would that mean that regardless of whether you had an affiliation with this organization that's being discussed, you would still be involved in protecting the boundary waters?
Representative Faulkner.
Yeah, oh my goodness, yes. I can't imagine a worse place to have this sort of toxic mining. This means so much to my family. It means so much to millions of Minnesotans and people across the country. It's our way of life. It's the icon of the North. To have it imperiled, honestly, tears me up inside. And yeah, I would 100% have been involved in whatever way that I could up to and including serving in the legislature. I mean, when I was out door knocking, it was so apparent. People would literally greet me at the door as the Boundary Waters guy. Like, hey, you're the Boundary Waters guy. One family, there's a trip, they were packing up for their own Boundary Waters trip. It was during the August primary GOTV time. And they said, don't worry, voted for you early. We're packing up to go in the wilderness. You know, thanks for being our champion. So.
That's fine.
1,000% yes.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. And then you mentioned, I believe, in your testimony that these pieces of legislation have actually been brought forward in previous legislative sessions. Do you know who the author was of the previous Save the Boundary Waters kind of campaign?
Yeah. Author. So, oh, sorry. Thank you. HF 309, which is the current incarnation. The last biennium was authored by Representative Sandra Feist, and previous to that was Representative Kelly Morrison.
Okay.
Chair Claiborne.
That's all I have for the moment right now. If I can maybe come back if I think of something else, if we
Chair
still
Moore.
Have time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I heard you correctly, but just want to be sure, the Save the Boundary Waters campaign has, did you say, 400 members?
Representative Faulkner?
Yeah, the coalition has over 400 members that ranges from organizations, associations, and business owners.
Chair Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you've talked a little bit about the different job descriptions and job duties you have, but have you done any lobbying for NMW since you have become a sworn legislator?
Representative Faulkner?
No, I have not.
Chair Moore.
And have you ever worked as a state or federal lobbyist while you've been elected?
Representative Faulkner?
No, I have not.
Chair Mueller?
And then just in regards to the letter that was mentioned and submitted as an exhibit, have you ever seen or signed on to other issue letters from other legislators to members of Congress or the federal administration?
Rep. Faulkner?
Yes, I have. Both I have signed on them, and then there's plenty of examples on both sides of the aisle of members signing on to letters that went to Congress, including members that it would have benefited their profession.
That's all. Chair Mueller. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Meyer?
Thank you, Chair. Just a few follow-up questions. One is, boundary waters, are they solely located in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Falconer.
The boundary waters, as designated as a federal wilderness, yes, is located solely within the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Chair. And as your role as a legislator, that's ongoing, even though when session ends, I mean, the job doesn't stop. It keeps going, correct?
Representative Falconer.
The role of a legislator, yeah. We're a part-time so-called legislator, but I guess some members could choose to shut off their inbox and wait to gavel in January. I don't think most do, and I count myself as one of those that don't do that.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. And as your job title of Federal Affairs Manager, within the organization, is that considered a higher level position?
Representative Falconer.
Yeah. Yes, I guess it would be.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. And yeah, finally, any reimbursement or compensation for maybe any travel you have done specifically to, you know, some of the bills that you have carried or for the organization while you've been an elected official?
Representative Falconer.
For the bills that I've, no, not for the bills that I've carried. I mean, I've traveled as a course of my job, and work reimburses me for that, but not on anything that I've carried or actively worked on in this legislature.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. And so final question. So there is some payment that is going on during your legislative time.
Oh, I'm sorry if I misunderstood the previous question. I guess I didn't understand it fully.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just the question of any reimbursed expenses for travel you may have done as your role with your employer that you've been reimbursed for your travel when you go around, working for that organization, while you're a legislator.
Representative Falconer.
Oh, I see. So while I'm not necessarily during session, just as a legislator. Yeah, like we ran into each other coincidentally in Omaha, and I was in Omaha doing a community presentation. We were meeting up at a brewery to talk to Omaha people that love the boundary waters, and that's an example. And we saw each other in the hotel room, in the hotel, not in the hotel lobby.
Representative Myers?
Nope, oh, that's all I got.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much. Chair Davids, and this may be just to clarify, you are not a lobbyist, and you are not a state lobbyist, not a federal lobbyist.
Representative Falconer?
That is correct.
Okay. Chair Claiborne?
Thank you. And any travel reimbursement would have been for community organizing. Is that what I just heard?
Representative Falconer?
Yes, community organizing, education, conferences, presentations, things like that, yeah.
Okay. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. And then I just want to make sure that work is, Chair Davids, I'm looking at you because I'm asking the question. That work is done not during the legislative session. I just want to make sure we're all clear that you've said you're on leave of absence while you're in the legislature. Is that correct?
Representative Falconer?
Yes, that is correct.
All right, thank you.
Chair Claiborne?
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, any other questions for members? Chair Moeller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know you were asked some questions about your work when we're not in session. We still have some legislative obligations. But I know many legislators have other jobs to help pay the bill when we're not in session. And so are you aware of other legislators who work and get paid for other jobs when the legislature's not in session?
Representative Falconer.
When the legislature is not in session, yes, many. I would hazard to guess that most.
Rep. Mueller? Okay. Okay, House Rule 610 allows the Ethics Committee to recess for an executive session to consider or determine the matter of probable cause. I move a recess for an executive session. The room will be cleared other than members and staff.
And microphones turned off.
No, I just said we were going to do it. Oh, all those in, been too used to being tax chair. Yeah. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails unanimously. Thank you. Thank you. The hour of 3:30 having arrived, we will call the committee out, the Ethics Committee out of recess back into session here. So I'm going to announce the finding of the Ethics Committee. We had a very thorough discussion. And in the executive session, the committee voted unanimously that there is no probable cause. I'm talking about the Engen-Hudson case. However, the committee would like to clarify the norms and rules of the House under Rule 9. Chair Mueller, could you read to the committee and the folks that are here the statement?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The House Ethics Committee wishes to clarify the expectations and norms of behavior for the body. House members are expected to attend assigned committees unless excused, do the work of the committee, and treat testifiers with dignity and respect. It is incumbent upon members to bring honor to the body and to uphold the public trust, signed by all four members of the Ethics Committee.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. In the case of Representative Falconer, the executive session has voted unanimously, and in, I've been on Ethics Committee since before most of you were born, and that is a big deal, the unanimously part, that there's no probable cause. So probable cause has not been found in either case. So these cases are closed. What I would like to do, though, is I would really like to thank our staff. They are amazing. Ellen, Casey, Christian, Jennifer, partisan research, nonpartisan research, you helped us out so much. No further comment to the press. You will have the document that Chair Mueller read. Anything else for the good of the order for members? Good government all the time. We are adjourned.